Hey y'all, and welcome to Southern Fried Spooky, the podcast home of all things Southern Spooky, and this week, quarantined.
Wasn't that like in 2020?
Yes. We're going back in time. Pardon. I swear I'm not sick. I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
And I'm your Florida man, Tony. Also not sick.
Neither of us are this week. Mm-hmm. Yay. We'd like to remind you all that we have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And a Patreon.
Indeed.
Feel free to drop by and leave some likes, comments, etc. Mm-hmm. Also, please leave leave a few stars of approval on your podcast platform of choice.
Julie, do the thing!
By the way, for those of you slightly local, we went to a little baby Renaissance Festival a few weeks back.
Indeed.
The Eastern North Carolina Renaissance Festival. Our good friend, who was often on here playing Anne Bonny, and also in Beaufort, she was the queen there. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to support her. She's done a good bit of voice work for us.
Indeed.
Also, we'd like to give a little shout out to the patrons there that somehow actually recognized Tony.
Very weird.
Asked for his autograph and everything. We didn't catch your name, but glad to meet you. Yeah. I wasn't there, but Tony was.
Well, he had actually asked if you were there.
Well, I was. I think I was in the food line.
Yeah.
In my hoop skirt.
I was like,
and all.
She's somewhere.
It's not that big a fair.
Oh, yeah.
So, hey, hello to you. Tell us who you are. Mm-hmm. So this week, we're looking at a story that has long intrigued both of us. It's not Southern at all, alas. So it's one of our little wanderings about.
Indeed. Ah, we're going on walkabout.
Right. And it isn't actually spooky in the paranormal sense.
It's kind of messed up, though.
It is scary, though, especially as we've only been out of the COVID craziness for a few years.
Oh, yeah.
So imagine being told you're ill, or that you make other people ill, and for the good of society, you have to be isolated, even though you've done nothing wrong.
Indeed.
So, for those of us who really well remember lockdown, mm-hmm. imagine being on a tiny little island all alone for the rest of your life. And imagine being in a class, or one of several classes, that are looked down upon.
Yeah, so you are now an untouchable, and you have to be set to... You're going to be on an island for the rest of your life.
Herein lies the story. Mary Mallon.
Also known commonly as...
Typhoid Mary.
Indeed.
A name that triggered fear back then, and even to this day, has a bit of a taint to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, now typhoid's easily cured, but back then...
It is, but the premise remains... It's a name that has long... It's almost legendary at this point. We forget that she was a real person. And she was an Irish cook who infected a lot of unsuspecting people with typhoid fever. She caused at least 3 deaths and possibly even more.
Which is what... Yeah, that's kind of really funny because back then... Just being around her could kill you.
But very few people knew that.
Yep.
It was not well understood.
And nowadays, they give you 3 or 4 pills and send you home.
We've come a long way. Mm-hmm. Mary Mallon was born in 1869 in Cookstown, County Tyrone, Ireland. Now, her mother had typhoid fever during pregnancy, so it's theorized that she was just born with a form of the disease.
Well, that's sort of like,
like the girl in Last of Us?
Well, yeah, I mean, or... Well, and also, much like Ellie from The Last of Us, Mary was asymptomatic.
Hmm.
Which means she showed no symptoms whatsoever. She didn't even know she had it. Sort of like Doc Holliday. Had no idea that he had... tuberculosis until his 20s.
Interesting.
Yeah, and he was born with it.
So, first off, since it's one of these antique diseases that's not around that much anymore.
A designer disease.
Typhoid fever.
Oh, here we go.
Also known as typhoid.
Or typhus.
It's a disease caused by Salmonella enterica, and more words I don't understand. It's a bacteria.
Yeah.
Symptoms vary. Mild to severe, mm-hmm. and they begin 1 to 4 weeks after exposure.
So from like a week to a month is when you'll start seeing the bigger symptoms.
Usually there's the gradual onset of a very high fever, mm-hmm. which was pretty dangerous back then.
Yeah.
Accompanied by weakness, abdominal pain, constipation, headaches. It says mild vomiting, but I don't think there's ever such thing as mild.
Yeah.
Some people develop a rash.
Yeah.
And without treatment, which of course back then, no antibiotics.
Yep.
Symptoms could last for weeks or months. There's a lot of gastric distress, mm-hmm. shall we say. Diarrhea can happen. And it's believed to infect and replicate only within humans. So,
yeah,
that's the disease we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, back then, scary stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, like, the doctor would laugh at you and send you home with three pills.
Well, we've sort of almost come full circle. We have all these wonderful vaccines, and then we've gotten to the point where people sort of question vaccination, but we're not that sort. We believe in vaccination.
Well, it's like one of those things of, it's like the doctor would look at you and go, you have salmonella typhi? Take these, go home, and wash your damn hands.
Yeah, a lot.
Like, I mean, that's what they would tell you to do.
As I understand, back in this time, people thought most communicable diseases were carried in the, what they called, miasma, bad air.
Yeah.
So they didn't really bother washing their hands because they didn't know, like, what good would that do to them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even after going to the bathroom, because it's the air, not anything else. Oh, yeah. At least that was the idea. So back to Mary.
So, well, first off,
okay,
not to gross anyone out, but do you know
dinner how, warning?
Do you, yeah, if you're eating, stop eating now or pause the damn podcast. So we all know what salmonella is. You get it from eating.
Yeah.
Okay. So typhoid fever is a form of salmonella. It mainly resides in human waste. Especially human waste that has not been washed from the hands.
Gotcha.
So, that's how it spreads?
Oh, yeah. So, we're getting there.
Yeah, I'm just letting everyone know that that's how it spreads.
This may be one of the more unsavory ones we cover.
Yeah.
In 1884, mm-hmm. at the age of 15, Mary emigrated from Ireland to the U.S., one of the masses of people looking for a better life. Her parents had gone through the potato famine, and they wanted better for their only daughter.
That was rough.
Yeah, Mary moved and lived with her aunt and uncle for a time, and worked as a maid, and eventually became a cook for mm-hmm. affluent families. Now, if you're not aware, in the 1880s, we should note that the Irish were considered a sort of lesser class person
yeah.
in England and in the U.S.
Right up above servant. Right up above.
Well, they were servants.
I mean, right up above, like, slaves, stuff like
that. Oh, yeah.
Like,
they were often,
a lot of people look down on Irish. They're like, oh, no.
Like, until pretty late, you could still see signs, usually in England, but Irish need not apply.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it's pretty bad.
So, yeah, white people will even discriminate against other white people.
Yep.
So they were found in menial jobs. Mm-hmm. So Mary was young, working class, an immigrant, unmarried woman. Now, of course, at first she's 15, but gets older.
Well, no, well, we're also talking about the 1880s. 15? You're beyond marrying age.
So she was a lot of suspicious mm-hmm. and discriminated classes. Like, yeah. An unmarried woman, what's up with that? She liked making her own way.
I mean, I know it's kind of weird to say it nowadays, but back then, 15, you should have already had a kid by then.
Oof. So, that's what she was up against.
Yeah.
Her resume wasn't great, obviously. I mean, they didn't have resumes exactly. But she was a cook.
Mm-hmm.
She was a very good cook. And the employment agencies she worked with had no problem finding her work. And
oh, yeah.
It was not uncommon for her to end up in the houses of very wealthy families.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, remember what Tony said about spreading the diseases and how she cooked for a living?
Yes.
In the early 1900s, Mallon worked in New York City area for consecutively 8 different families.
Yep.
7 of which contracted typhoid.
Mm-hmm.
She worked in Mamaroneck? I have no idea how to say that. Somewhere in New York, where within 2 weeks of her employment, residents developed typhoid fever. In 1901, she went to Manhattan, members of the family developed fevers and diarrhea. Mm-hmm. And each time, Mary had no idea she was the one who caused it. She was thinking, okay, typhoid is a, quote, lower class, working class disease.
Oh, yeah, no. It is definitely considered one of those diseases that only the people without money would get.
Because they have poor sanitation, yeah. Not great space. They're all crammed together. And
oh, that is definitely, look, lovey, that is definitely a poor people disease.
Indeed, indeed. So she was thinking that wherever she was finding work, these, you know, nice, affluent, wealthy houses, how surprising it was that they would get hit with typhoid. Now, usually it would start with the servants, but so she would leave.
And also, remember, she's asymptomatic. She should be so showing signs. It's like, look, if I'm getting people sick, why am I not sick?
Well, at this point, she doesn't even think that. Yeah. She's not aware. All she knows is that, oh, once again, there's an outbreak of typhoid. Why is that? But then she would move on. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't unusual for servant-type people to kind of move around a little bit, keep hoping for better and better circumstances. In 1904, she was hired by a very prosperous lawyer, Henry Gilsey, and soon 4 out of the 7 servants were ill. None of the family was affected because the servants kind of, well, they had their own house, which is also kind of nice. And immediately after the outbreak, Malin left and went to Tuxedo Park, where she was hired by someone else. The laundress in that household immediately became infected. Well, not immediately, but quickly, like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And was taken to St. Joseph's Regional Medical Center. Her case of typhoid was the first in a long time, and unfortunately, the laundress died shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. So the investigators at the time thought, well, the laundry worker caused the outbreak. He didn't prove it, but I'm not really sure how they would prove it back then. So, 1906, Malin found work in Oyster Bay on Long Island with the family of a wealthy New York banker, Charles Warren. Mm-hmm. And she got to go along with them when they rented a house in Oyster Bay for the summer in 1906. From August 27th to September 3rd, which is not very long, 6 of the 11 people in the family came down with typhoid. And again, the disease at this point in time was unusual in Oyster Bay because it's a rich people thing.
Yeah, and it's and typhoid's considered a poor people disease.
And the landlord who rented the house knew it would be very difficult to re-rent the house if it has a reputation of typhoid. So he hired several independent experts to find the source of the infection. They took water samples from the pipes, the faucets, the toilets, which, you know, are kind of still in their infancy.
Yeah.
And all of these sources tested negative for typhoid. I do not know what was involved in the tests back then.
Well, it wasn't like today where you just put a sample in a bottle, break something, and shake it, and it turns a color. Like,
right.
I'm fairly sure that they had to look at every last sample underneath a microscope just to find identifying markers.
So an investigator was hired by the Oyster Bay property owner, a sanitation engineer whose name, I kid you not, is George Soper. I do find that kind of funny.
This is like the guy who studies whales. His last name is Scary.
But whales aren't scary. Yes. But yeah, his name was S-K-E-R-R-Y. Mm-hmm. We were just watching Secrets of the Whales. Totally unrelated.
Yeah. But we're just talking about cool last names.
Right. So he was trying to research the source of the typhoid outbreak. And eventually he came upon a repeating physical description of an Irish cook. And he managed to locate her. Eventually. Because she usually would leave without leaving a forwarding address.
Yeah.
The Park Avenue outbreak helped to identify Malin as the source of, well, suspected source of the infections.
Mm-hmm.
Soper learned of the case while it was still active and discovered Malin was the crook. Germ theory was new, and Soper was a man of science.
Yeah.
But he wanted to make sure of his suspicions. Well, Soper tracked her down.
Mm-hmm.
He first met Malin in the kitchen of the Bones Park Avenue penthouse that she shared with several other servants. Now, he was aware that she probably didn't have a lot of education, and she was a woman, but, you know, so therefore, her being the carrier really wasn't her fault, because how could she possibly know?
Yeah.
All he needed to do was to educate her on changing her entire life, and she'd no longer be a threat to society. He was sure that she would be grateful for his warnings, and society would be safe. This would be easy. It did not go well.
Thanks, Nuke Top 5.
Now, Mr. Soper himself recollected that his behavior was as diplomatic as possible. And, well, Malin was resistant. She's, at this point, a 20 to 30-something Irish woman who are, well, you know, we're kind of known for having tempers.
Yeah.
And he suggested, insinuated, or flat-out said that she was the carrier, which she totally couldn't understand because she was not sick.
Yeah.
And she was just furious. And then he made things worse by being so indelicate as to request samples. Samples of blood, urine, and stool. She was aghast. I mean, you just don't do that to a stranger.
Right?
This man came to her house, made accusations of her, and then wanted her to help him?
Look, I'm going to poke you with a needle. You're going to pee in this and poop in this.
Yeah, that was not going well. As a matter of fact, he had tried to... He basically had her cornered while he was trying to, quote, educate her. And being the feisty woman that she was, she pulled out the biggest carving fork she had and threatened him with it. So he decided to take a more academic approach, and he compiled a 5-year history of her employment.
Mm-hmm.
And he found that... Now, imagine, this is before Google. You can't just look these things up at this point in time. He had to do a lot of legwork, a lot of writing letters, a lot of door-to-door. He found that of the 8 families that had hired Malin, 7 had claimed to have contracted typhoid fever. Then he learned where Malin's boyfriend lived, which is not mentioned. I still don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And arranged a new meeting there. And he took Dr. Raymond Hubler, what a name, in an attempt to persuade Mary to give them said samples. She still refused.
Of course.
Claiming, which is not untrue, typhoid was everywhere and the outbreaks happened because of contaminated food and water. And she, again, was getting really good at threatening people with her carving fork.
Which I imagine one does.
So he publishes his findings on June 15th, 1907, in the Journal of American Medical Association. He wrote... Do you want to read this? Or
go ahead.
Okay. It was found that the family changed cooks on August 4th. This was about 3 weeks before the typhoid epidemic broke out. The new cook, Malin, remained in the family only a short time and left about 3 weeks after the outbreak occurred. Malin is described as an Irish woman about 40 years of age, tall, heavy, single. She seemed to be in perfect health. Soper notified the New York City Health Department, and those investigators realized that Malin was a typhoid carrier. This was kind of a new thing. They had not understood or seen this really that much before. Legalese. By sections 1169 and 70 of the Greater New York Charter, Malin was arrested as a public health threat. They enlisted the help of a Dr. Josephine Baker, not to be confused with the exotic dancer in Paris.
Yeah.
She was also a woman. She may have been sympathetic, you know, as you know, a woman used to sexism, as she had actually achieved her medical license. But she was called upon to help convince Malin to, cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
Some things just require a woman's touch, but Malin was already quite angry, and she was really done with this. Josephine Baker brought 5 policemen and an ambulance, and they basically burst into her house. She ran into the house, this is a house filled with other servant-type ladies. She managed to hide for 5 hours, and they had to find her. Her housemates pretended to not even know who she was. We're like, yeah, we may have heard of her, but we're not helping you find her. So, eventually she was caught, restrained, squashed into the ambulance, and Dr. Baker had to physically sit on her to keep her in place. She was taken to the Willard Parker Hospital, where she was again restrained and more or less forced to give samples kind of against her will.
Yeah.
She was not allowed to get up and use the restroom of her own. She had to have an escort. And when these samples were gotten... The massive numbers of typhoid bacteria that were discovered there indicated that she was the source, probably in the gallbladder.
Mm.
And during questioning, Malin admitted that she almost never washed her hands. But this was not unusual at the time, because germ theory of disease was new, and again, lesser educated people would never have heard of this. It's newfangled technology, you know. So!
And also, I think back then, like, especially the early 1900s, asymptomatic characters were almost few and far between. It was very unheard of for someone to be sick, but not be sick.
Right. Like, how could she possibly have this disease? Because she'd seen what other people had. Yeah. They had rash. They were, you know, burning up with fever. They were in bed for weeks. She felt fine. Mm-hmm. She had felt fine all her life. She had never really ever been sick. However, in 1907, she was sentenced to quarantine on North Brother Island. North and South Brother Islands are small islands located in New York City's East River between the Bronx and Rikers Island. Now, North Brother Island was the site of the Riverside Hospital for quarantinable diseases. Mostly, it was tuberculosis.
I was about to say, it's a tuberculosis, like, because that was the big thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
That
was highly contagious.
The things that killed most people back then when they were, like, viral and stuff was the flu, tuberculosis, and typhoid. Well, those were the three main things that killed people.
I don't know that they ever did they quarantine much for typhoid, or did it just sort of come and go?
Well,
like, once you have tuberculosis, you're stuck.
I think this is one of the headlining cases that started making them quarantine for typhoid, because they didn't realize that, like I said before, that typhoid could be carried asymptomatically. So they were like, "Well, this is a first,"
right? By the way, the hospital, you can see urban explorers and such going to this island. Strictly speaking, you're not. It's uninhabited, and it is accessible to certain scientific sorts with permission.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you do see people who go there and explore. I don't recommend it, but...
You can probably see it on YouTube.
Oh, absolutely. So, poor lady. While quarantined, she gave stool and urine samples 3 times a week. Authorities suggested removing her gallbladder.
Been there, done that.
She refused because, for one thing, she still did not believe she carried the disease. And also, considering that they didn't really have antibiotics and all that, most surgeries are still pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
And she would rather risk it than risk dying from the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really unwilling to stop working as a cook because that job made more money than most of the others. More so than, you know, the laundress. More so than just the house servant. Because, cooking required skill.
Yeah.
Cleaning is easily teachable, I guess. I don't know. And because she didn't really have a home of her own, she was always sort of on the verge of poverty, but she usually lived in the houses she worked in. So on the island... So as not to mix contagions, I guess, she was given a tiny little cottage. She was not in the sanitarium with all the tuberculosis patients.
Well, that's the last thing you need, is giving the people who have tuberculosis a lung disease.
It's like, hi, you have consumption and typhus.
Yeah, like, you're just, that's like a death sentence. Like, it's, yeah.
She spent almost 3 years alone, except for occasional visits from the sample collectors and the people who treated her like a prisoner. Well, she was a prisoner, but treated her like a criminal. Someone did allow her to have a small dog. Don't know the name of the dog, only that it was a terrier, and she adored the dog because he was literally her only companion.
Right.
Now, after the publication of Soper's article, that one I mentioned before, Malin attracted extensive media attention and was given the nickname Typhoid Mary.
Indeed.
And also later in a textbook that defined typhoid fever, she was again mentioned as Typhoid Mary. Soper visited Malin in quarantine, telling her that he would write a book and give her part of the royalties. He is really good at ticking her off. She rejected his proposal and locked herself in the bathroom until he left.
It's like he walks up and she's like, dude, anytime I see you, you piss me off. Go away.
He just did not know how to handle her. And she had no time for him.
Well, one would think if she would just... And I know this was the mindset back then. Stop cooking, everybody would be fine. Because typhoid was not airborne.
Again, she didn't know that.
Yeah.
She didn't believe that. And no matter how much he told her... Because, of course, he was talking down to her like she's stupid. You know, he did not... I don't think he approached it well. He was thinking, I'll just tell her to change her profession and everything will be fine. Well, of course she was offended and upset. I mean, how easy is it to drop what you do and change entirely?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you'll be earning less than half what you do now as a cook.
Yeah, no.
Why would she?
No.
I mean, yeah, from her perspective. Plus, she didn't believe this weird idea that she was sick but not sick. She wrote in a letter to her lawyer, I wonder how the said Dr. William H. Park would like to be insulted and put in a journal and call him or his wife Typhoid William Park. Not all medical experts endorsed the decision to forcibly quarantine Malin. There were a few doctors that argued that she just had to be taught to carefully treat her condition. And ensure that she would not transmit typhoid to others. Yeah. Like, nowadays, I think there would be, like, PPE involved,
well,
lots
of
washing.
Well, not even that. Nowadays, this is not a thing.
No, it
nowadays,
really isn't.
The doctor would look at you and imagine the emoji hands, wash your damn hands!
Right? They considered isolation to be unnecessary and overly strict. She suffered a nervous breakdown after being arrested and... forced into the hospital and on. She tried to sue the New York Health Department, but her complaint was denied and the case dismissed.
What's it? A woman suing us? Most unorthodox.
She complained in a letter to her lawyer that she was being treated like a guinea pig. She was obliged to give the samples 3 times a week, and she was tired of kind of being nothing more than the equivalent of her waist, so to speak.
Yeah.
She was not even allowed to visit an eye doctor or have him come see her when she was having sort of a tweaking eye.
Mm.
It was twitching on her.
Yeah.
It did eventually go away, but it rather annoyed her. Again, she never really believed. She claimed to never believe that she was a carrier, and I don't know that she ever really knew. She had a friend, Mr. Brayhoff, who arranged to send, shall we say, leftovers of her samples to someone else entirely for an independent laboratory to test for typhoid, and these allegedly came back negative. On North Brother Island, almost a quarter of her analyses from 1907 through 1909 were also negative, so we're not sure what's going on here. Does she suddenly become less contagious?
Communicable?
I don't know. After 2 years and 11 months of quarantine, the New York State Commissioner of Health decided that disease carriers should no longer be quarantined and that Malin could be freed if she agreed to stop working as a cook and to take reasonable efforts to avoid transmitting typhoid to others. On February 19th, 1910, Malin said she was, quote, prepared to change her occupation and would give assurance by affidavit that she would, upon her release, take such hygienic precautions as would protect those with whom she came in contact from infection. She was released and returned to the mainland. So, they did not even arrange to train her in anything new. They just sort of dropped her back in the middle of society.
All right, you're going to wash your hands, right?
She ended up being a laundry worker, so she did nothing but wash
cooking.
Her hands.
No more cooking? Now get out!
The laundress job paid $20 a month, whereas cooking paid $50. And at some point, she somehow injured her arm, and that became infected, meaning that she couldn't work at all for 6 months. And then she just kind of disappeared out of the public eye for 5 years. And eventually, it turned out that she was using fake names. Once, she actually used the name of her friend Brayhoff, or Brown. And she was taking jobs as a cook.
She traveled on the Titanic as Molly!
Not quite. But she was working against the explicit instructions of health authorities and against her own words since she signed the affidavit.
Yeah.
And no agencies that hired servants for affluent families would offer her employment, so for these 5 years, she worked in kitchens in restaurants, hotels, spas,
Oh, Lord.
And everywhere she went, there were outbreaks of typhoid. Mm-hmm. But again, she changed her jobs frequently, and Soper was never quite able to catch up with her.
This is sort of like a catch-me-if-you-can story.
Yeah. In 1915, a now middle-aged Mallon started working at Sloan Hospital for Women in New York City. And very quickly, 25 people were infected. 2 died.
Yeah.
The chief obstetrician called Soper and asked him to help in the investigation. And he figured out it was Mallon. He found samples of her writing, and he recognized it right away. Well, Mary Mallon fled again, but the police were able to find and arrest her when she took food to a friend, how nice, on Long Island. She was returned to quarantine on North Brother Island and back to her tiny house. There she remained for 23 years. Now, the first time, she was very resentful, really hated it, didn't do well with people.
Yeah.
I think at this point, she just sort of understood that this is her life now. By 1918, she was allowed to take day trips to the mainland. And in 1925, Dr. Alexandra Plavska came to the island for an internship. She organized a laboratory on the second floor of the chapel and offered Mallon a job as a technician. So Mallon washed bottles, wow, did recordings, prepared glasses for the pathologist, and she actually made friends with various staff on the island.
That's cool. Now, it took her a while. That I had not heard of.
Now, during her quarantines, the newspapers shifted their opinion. And at first, the articles mentioned how Dr. Josephine Baker was attacked by Mallon and other doctors. She had her carving fork, and she fought and swore and was not very ladylike. And so she was sort of one of these people that, well, she deserves to be locked up in one of these unwashed masses. But later the press articles shifted the blame from being her fault, given that she was unaware of the germs and all that, and even if she was, she didn't have control over it.
Yeah.
The newspapers also claimed that Mallon was forbidden from using the telephone to contact anybody. Not sure if that's true. Stories that once celebrated the public health department and the legal system eventually became sympathetic to Mallon and the events she endured. Public health officials claimed the opposite, that she was treated to their best ability, but in return, she refused to comply with the requests of the health officials, which she kind of did.
Yeah.
But she spent the rest of her life, from age 45 to 69, in quarantine at the Riverside Hospital on North Brother Island. But she was quite active until she suffered a stroke in 1932. After that, she was confined to the actual hospital. She never really recovered, and half of her body remained paralyzed. She finally passed away of pneumonia in 1938.
Not typhoid. Pneumonia got her.
Well, typhoid seemed to have an arrangement with her.
Yeah.
Typhoid left her alone, as long as they got to use her as a trolley to other people. It was pneumonia that got her.
Right.
She was cremated, and her ashes were buried at St. Raymond's Cemetery in the Bronx. And several of her island friends attended her funeral. Now, some sources claim that a post-mortem autopsy found evidence of live typhoid bacteria in her gallbladder. Soper wrote, however, that there was no autopsy, a claim cited by other researchers to assert a conspiracy to calm public opinion after her death. Don't know. Don't know what happened. But she was the first in which an asymptomatic carrier, this was like a new idea, was discovered and forcibly isolated. The health officials at the time had no idea what to do with her. I mean, there are ethical issues, legal issues, which are still discussed. There is the whole notion of the, what is it, like the trolley idea?
What, the trolley theory?
Yes, the trolley theory.
Yeah.
Like, do you allow the trolley to run one person over if it would save 22 other people, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So it's like for the greater good.
Yeah.
Research estimates that Mallon had contaminated at least 122 people, with 5 dead. That could be wrong, because again, kind of hard to keep notes during this time. Other sources attribute at least 3 deaths to contact with Mallon, but because of health officials' inability to persuade her to cooperate, that number is not known.
Yeah.
However, Mallon's case helped the officials identify other people who carried diseases that were dormant in their own cases, using information that they learned from Malin's case. Malin's case created a lot of controversy concerning personal autonomy and social responsibility. These are kind of heavy things. And it was also the first case that provided good evidence of the existence of asymptomatic carriers.
Yep. Again, it was a very unknown thing back then.
There were a couple of others identified in the first quarter of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. Tony Labella, an Italian immigrant, presumed to have caused more than 100 cases with 5 deaths. An Adirondack guy dubbed Typhoid John, presumed to have infected 36 people, 2 dead. And Alphonse Coutil, a restaurateur and bakery owner. He was allowed to keep working and baking. Why? Because he was a man with a family.
Yeah, because he was a guy and he had a family.
Yes, whereas the unmarried immigrant woman, how strange.
Unmarried, unwashed, most unorthodox.
And that's our tale.
Yeah.
It's another healthy dose of creepy life in our world.
Indeed. You know, back when they didn't know what asymptomatic meant.
Yeah.
It's like, how can a person be sick but be not sick at the same time? Well, welcome to Earth.
As always, we tend to mention that medical science has come a long way.
Oh, yeah.
In a fairly short time, really.
Well, I mean, any kind of medical journal, in 3 years, it's outdated.
Yeah, and this is, what, 100 years ago?
Yeah, but, I mean, nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
You read a medical journal, in 3 years, you're learning new techniques.
Indeed.
And it's only getting faster.
Yes, I don't envy doctors and their need for continuing education all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we hope you enjoyed the story of Mary Malin, also known as Typhoid Mary.
Indeed.
So let us know what you thought and what you think would have been fair for her.
I don't know.
It's such a detailed, delicate discussion,
like,
right?
Back then you couldn't really say anything, like, or you couldn't do anything because you just didn't know.
True. Like, what's very common knowledge now, the average person had no clue of back then.
Yeah, I mean, and they're like, well, what do we do with her? Well, I don't know. Catch her, send her to the Rock, we'll be done. By the way, the Rock is what they call the prison.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alcatraz, though, right?
Yep.
Not Rikers,
yeah.
Which is next door to her island.
Yeah.
Well, join us next week for another heaping dose of whatever this is.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
And I'm your Florida man, Tony.
He's fine. I'm so glad we're not live. And we are
Southern Fried Spooky.
Until next time. Bye,
y'all. Bye, y'all.
Allergies, right?
No, yeah, allergies. I do
totally not
have typhoid.
Oh,
well, even if I did, they'd send me home.
Right?
It's not like I'm going to Rikers for the rest of my life.
Yay, antibiotics.
It's like, go home. Seriously.
Pretty much.
Take these pills, go home.
Sleep on the couch. You're not coming into my room.
Wash your damn hands.